Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is Seed Pod, a new series from Completely Arbitrary, where we sit down and converse with tree-related people.
Maybe we'll play a game, maybe we'll draw a picture together or whittle a spoon, but no matter what, it's always a pleasant chat with someone who loves trees.
This week we bring you local Portland tree legend Phyllis Reynolds. She's a photographer, tree activist, and author of Trees of Greater Portland, among other books.
Also, she's an original member of the Portland Heritage Tree Committee. You're about to hear part of our conversation with Phyllis, but if you're a Tremium member, you will have access to the uncut video versions of these conversations.
If you're not already a Tremium member, head over to arbitrarypod.supercast.com or click the link in the description to support the show.
Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees. Get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again, and it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. but it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring!
Yeah, if you would, Phyllis, could you introduce yourself? And if you're willing to tell us how old you are.
I'm Phyllis Reynolds, and I am, 94 and a half.
94 and a half. Is your half birthday in January?
No, December. So I'm over.
So you're a little over half. All right. Okay. Yeah. Well, happy half birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and the second thing is, so I'm Casey Clapp. We've met before. You obviously have met Alex Croson, my co-host with the podcast. And so when we were driving up, Alex is like, well, what are we gonna talk about? And we didn't really say, I said, oh, well, it's Phyllis Reynolds. She's famous and all these things. And then he asked, well, what does she do? And I was like, actually, I know she's written books, but I'm not actually sure. So I also wanted to see if you would be willing to regale us what you have done, because you don't work anymore, as far as I know, at least in terms of professionally.
I'm not gainfully employed.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, us neither.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe you could argue employed. Gainfully, yeah, you've gone too far. Right.
There's no gainfully for me.
Yeah, so what is it that you used to do, or what do you do now?
I used to do, at one time, I was a shrink. Mm-hmm. I was a clinical psychologist at the University of Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
And I was on the faculty of the medical school there. Mm-hmm. I am from Portland.
Yeah.
And I am a native, but my husband and I lived in Minnesota for 20 years. Mm. And he was on the faculty also. So I became a shrink at the student health service.
Gotcha.
At the university, which I liked. And then we decided we didn't want to die in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And so we moved back to Portland, uh-huh, where our parents were.
Okay.
I tried private practice here, didn't like it very well.
Hmm.
And then I very slowly kind of got into, no, I was an artist, actually. I was a professional artist. It was showed in galleries all over. I was a printmaker.
Really?
Printmaking? Yeah.
No kidding.
Etching, monotypes, etc.
Really?
Yeah.
For me, I've always imagined etching. I have a lot of older books where etching was the standard of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always like, how do people do this in such detail? I had no idea you did etching.
Yeah. Well, there are etchings and there are etchings. There's etchings in copper.
Uh-huh.
where you dig into it and so forth. Yeah. And then there's etchings that I did on zinc, which you use an acid to eat out the groove that you put the ink in, et cetera. But I did that until, I can't remember the year, but the small galleries around everywhere, in the state, and I showed in California a little bit too, and Washington, they all kind of collapsed. The business went down the tube.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I stopped being an etcher because why make umpteen dozen prints of something that you're not going to
sell? Not going to go anywhere. Yeah.
What kind of things did you etch? Like, what were your sort of subjects that you really were drawn toward?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, I was pretty much straightforward, but then I liked monoprints a lot, which is just one thing on a piece of metal.
Okay.
And I got more excited about that and did kind of abstract things.
Hmm.
I really like that. I've got stuff around here somewhere. I did a lot. And then I stopped doing that. And about that time was when I first got interested in trees.
Uh-huh.
Robbie Robinson, who was affiliated with the city, who did a whole lot about trees in parks and the city, gave me a list of trees in the city that he thought they were important trees.
Yeah.
And so I and my co-author at the time went around and looked at these trees, and we discovered a whole lot of them were gone.
Yeah. Mm.
And so we decided we would write a book. Maybe a book would save a few trees.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it did, but
I love the irony of that, you know. Write a book to save trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
So anyway, we did it. Then she died before the book was written.
Mm.
And so I wrote the book and did all the photographs, did all the measuring, and so on.
And this is Trees of Greater Portland, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
The one, 1993 one.
1993, yeah.
Then I got into photography. I'm thinking chronologically here.
Mm-hmm.
I got into photography, and I kind of like that because the single lens reflex cameras came out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and Alex, do you know about this? I don't know anything about this
Casey,
kind of camera.
Casey, when we say DSLR SLR, that's single lens reflex.
Oh.
SLR, right.
Ah, okay, yeah. All right.
Right.
Thank you.
I know them as DSLR because
now it's digital.
That's
right?
When I got into photography.
I see.
But SLR.
Well, yeah, and I started out on that. That was great.
Yeah.
And it was, you could use a computer and da-da-da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
And then iPhones came out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I no longer have an SLR camera. But I did a lot of photography and had shows and so forth. And I'm a member of the Portland Garden Club, which I was head of photography of the group there that was doing photography, et cetera.
Yeah.
I started it, actually. That was good. Well, I still do photography, but I don't do anything professional.
Yeah, gotcha.
Because I've got my iPhone in my pocket.
So you're a photographer wherever you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's I think when I first came across your name, because I also grew up just here in Portland, technically Milwaukee, and then went around to the East Coast and went up to Seattle to do work, and then came back down to Portland. And when I got down to Portland, I ran across your book. It was actually in a Goodwill. So someone had bought it, and then I found it again. And I was like, Trees of Greater Portland, this is exactly the book that I want. This is great.
Yeah.
Good find.
It was a great find. I still, to this day, am like kind of stunned that I found it. I don't think I've ever seen like a local regional kind of guide at a Goodwill. But I didn't even know it existed. I didn't know you had existed before that. And then I ended up getting a job at the city of Portland as an inspector, and your name just kind of was ephemeral. It just came up all the time. Someone would bring it up and say, oh, Phyllis Reynolds. And then you'd see an email or see a response, from Phyllis Reynolds. Like, oh, Phyllis reached out. And I was like, who is this? Who is this person? And
you know what's funny, Casey? That's sort of how our relationship was in the beginning in high school.
Oh.
I knew of Casey. He was always the subject of everybody's wildest stories. See?
Wow, great.
He was this Paul Bunyan figure out there.
Well, thank you, Alex. I'm glad to be in such nice company. Well, I heard your name all the time. And then like people would just, they would tell it. And I have to say that whenever I would say, well, who is Phyllis Reynolds? They would usually respond like, oh, you don't know Phyllis Reynolds. And so you had this reputation of being like a very intense protector of trees. Like you spoke out for trees a lot. And then I learned when I talked with you a couple weeks ago that you were very integral in starting the Heritage Tree, either the committee or the program with the city. Is that true?
I didn't start it. Yeah. Jane Glazer started it. Kevin Hillary and I were original members of her committee.
Yeah.
Mm. And Jane didn't know much about trees. Mm-hmm. She was adamant about saving them, but her knowledge of trees. And so she formed this committee with Kevin and me and a couple of other arborists and so forth. And we would go around and look at trees and say, yes, that should be a heritage tree. Mm-hmm. And then the whole and then Jane quit after, I don't know, 4 years or something. I became head of the Heritage Tree Committee.
Gotcha.
At that point, Kevin was still on my committee.
Mm-hmm.
And I continued that for some time until I got very pissed by the Portland ombudsman who made a decision about heritage trees that they had to make a heritage tree, all of the neighbors where any root might go had to sign that they agreed.
Really?
Yes.
So what was the rule initially before that? How did you
there
guys
was
make
no
heritage
rule.
Tree? It was just
the owner of the trunk and so forth. Okay. Was one who signed
so
the
if it's,
thing.
So if it's on your property, you could say,
I
agree that this. And they would just sign a paper, essentially.
Yes. Mm. And unfortunately, it didn't go on to a deed or anything like that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think it does now.
It does, since 2015. That was a big move that the city had to do.
Do you have any particularly strong memories of trees that you worked really hard for that you won and the tree stayed or that it you know... somebody got the rights to cut it down. It was like a heartbreaker. Casey is all the time showing up to work going, I can't believe they're going to take that tree down on so-and-so in 45th. And anything?
Well, the biggest one comes to my mind is the Overlook Oak.
Yeah.
That is totally threatened by development.
Mm.
And we fought and fought and fought and everything about it. The guy who wants to develop it won.
Mm-hmm.
So this poor tree that is about 150, no. Yeah, well, it, at least 150.
At least 150, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there's an oak. This is a Gary oak. There's a Gary oak in Newburg, which is on the Oregon list.
Yeah, the Oregon Heritage Tree List.
That planting of the acorn is known, the date.
Oh, really?
Wow. So that,
and it's the same size as the one in Overlook.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's...
So you can do a pretty good comparison
you
there.
You can. And this tree in Overlook has lived its life in luxury. And suddenly it's going to get its roots cut, its branches cut, and it'll die. Probably in about 12 years.
Okay.
Wow.
And that's very sad to me.
Yeah.
And that's been set in motion. That's happening for sure.
That's happening. The guy owns, he hasn't developed it yet, but he's owns the land. He's got it platted and so forth. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Initially, they were going to try it, Alex, to put three houses right next to this tree.
Yeah.
And, put the branches come all the way down to the ground. It's 54 inches in diameter. So it's a gigantic tree.
Wow.
Yeah. And most people could lay down inside the cross section of the tree and not actually get outside of the bark. That's how big it is. And
with their arms outstretched like this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it used to be that they were going to put three houses right up next to it, yeah. and they would have had to cut branches, which is yeah. not allowed per the law.
Mm-hmm. It's so, a heritage tree.
It's a heritage yeah. tree. Yeah.
Did you sign off on that one, on the Overlook Oak being a heritage tree?
I got it to be a heritage
really?
Tree.
Really?
I talked to, yes, a woman named Mrs. Benson owned the house that is on the property. She owned all of the property.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was getting on, and she decided she wanted to save the tree. The best way she knew of was to make it a heritage tree. So I visited her, and we talked, and she was a nice person and so forth. And she signed. She was delighted the tree was going to get saved.
Yeah.
And then she did croak, die. Her son got the land mm-hmm. and sold it to a developer.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, the good news is, at the minimum, they went from those three houses to just two houses and pulled them back.
Yeah.
So it's at least it's not as bad as it was, because I was working for the city. That's another one of those instances when your name came up, along with Kevin's and a lot of other arborists, because that was a case that I had, but then I quit the city before it moved through kind of a second round. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very curious to see, with your 12 years, I'm going to remember this and see, I'm going to keep an eye on it. And it's a tree that is exceptional in every regard. And I think that ideally, with the two houses kind of move further away and not that third house, I'm hoping not to be against you, but I'm hoping you're wrong, that it's going to last more. So we'll keep an eye on it.
Well, the roots, we know yeah. how far the roots go.
That's right.
And we know what the ends of the roots are important mm-hmm, for. Mm-hmm. Gathering nutrients.
It's all nutrients.
Those
it's
ends.
All water.
And those ends are going to get cut off.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
It really is, yeah.
And so I really think the tree won't die overnight.
No. Yeah, it'll slow kind of decline.
Slowly decline.
Well, so in that regard, one thing I also was curious about is that you started really looking at trees in the city in, you said 93 was when you put out the mm-hmm. Trees of Greater Portland. So ostensibly in the late 80s, you were in it, looking around, starting to, you know,
yeah,
get involved
right.
with the city's right. trees. So is there anything that you like look back on and you're just like how has the city changed, I guess, in terms of urban forestry?
Well, the arborist, no, what was he called? The city...
Yeah, city forester is what it
city
is
City forester, yeah. yeah. Was a guy who, he was a nice guy, but I ended up not agreeing with him a lot.
Uh-huh.
And he cut down trees that I think he shouldn't have and so forth. And so I was very glad when he, whatever he did, retired or something or other.
Yeah.
1993 is about the time that Friends of Trees started.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so there was a move kind of at that time of making sure that Portland had trees.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Peraski down at the Portland State, who was head of geography down there, mm-hmm. was a big pusher for canopy saving.
Ugh,
and he was head of the commission for Portland.
Yeah, because this is right now, we call it the Urban Forestry Commission
yeah.
now. And essentially, it had it was the same group, but it was kind of more unofficial, I guess, back then.
No,
now it's codified.
No,
it was official?
Quite official.
Okay,
We were official enough to hear complaints that people had
mm-hmm.
if the city forester said, no, you can't cut that down, they could come to us
gotcha.
And say, well, my case is I need to cut this tree down, and mm-hmm. we would make the final decision.
So you could overrule the city forester?
Yes we could.
Oh, wow, nice.
Now that's power.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever like feel like you're sitting on a throne just waiting for people to come to you?
No, you know, it didn't happen that much, but people did come.
Yeah.
My neighbor, right across the street, came.
Really?
He had a huge, well, I counted the rings, 70-year-old Doug fir.
Wow, huge, but only 70. So that's like a young tree in terms of Doug's fir.
Well, this was all logged in 1950.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he wanted to cut it down because it was right in the middle of his driveway.
Mm.
And I was opposed to his cutting it down because it was a beautiful tree.
Yeah.
And it was a living beautiful Doug fir.
Yeah.
But the commission voted to let him cut it down, and it got cut down.
Yeah.
That's how I could count the...
I was going to say, yeah. We kind of we knew how that story was going to end.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that driveway now? You like that? Is it a good looking driveway?
No. It goes all of the houses over there go. It slopes way down.
Yeah. I constantly have said to myself, nobody moves to Portland. Nobody stays in Portland because we have such beautiful driveways. Our driveways are so spectacular. I say this to myself all the time, and I've yet to say it to an engineer somewhere. But I always am like, why are we cutting down all these things that are like, that's the reason. Like, everyone thinks of Oregon and Portland and the Pacific Northwest as like trees. That's what they think of. So whenever we end up cutting down a big, beautiful tree for something as innocuous as a driveway, I'm like, can't you just move the driveway? And like 90% of the time you can. So
yeah.
It's always, that's what I think, one of my biggest frustrations.
Yeah.
Do you think you would make a book called Driveways of Greater Portland?
Yeah.
Different types of concrete.
Well, I also think there is something about some men, and I think it's only men, who kind of feel they own the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they, of course, on their property, they own everything. And they can cut it down if they want. It's kind of a power thing.
Yeah.
I am not surprised to hear
like
that.
Like, they want to do it just because they can.
Yes. I own this tree. Yeah. I can cut it down. And they do.
Totally.
And I don't think women do that.
I think you're right. Yeah. We've actually run into that a few times just doing different stories for the podcast and talking about the role of the term I learned about in college is ecofeminism, where there's this active kind of line of philosophy that is exactly that, where there is this philosophical difference, even going down to language and culture, about men and women's interactions with trees. Mm-hmm. And even the land in terms of like Mother Nature and like language that is used about how it's destroyed, like, oh, you raped this, you know, piece of land. And it's very much a, you know, rapes are usually a one directional kind of thing. So it's one of those things. I think you're spot on with that kind of,
well,
that idea.
Bottom line, I think it's testosterone.
Uh-huh.
I really do think that there's a hormonal thing that gets men into that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, fighting wars, whatever.
Yeah.
The just whole
this,
thing.
This dominance kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine that in the 30 or like what? Yeah. I guess it's 30 years now since you came out that book. So 40 years. When did you move back to Portland, actually? From Minnesota?
We moved back in 1977.
Okay, yes. That's a significant amount of time to be able to look around and think, like, watch the whole city change. Yeah. Like, in the 70s, Portland, what was it like? Do you have decent memories of all the great fun that was there?
We moved to this house, and we've lived here. We lived here all the time.
Yes.
I grew up on Arlington Heights.
Okay, gotcha.
And I grew up about 1,000 feet from the Arboretum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, just down the street.
And so I would, back in the early 40s, walk in the Arboretum a lot.
Wow.
And it was quite young then.
I was going to say, it was only 20 years old around that time.
Right, right. Yeah. And I rode horses in the Arboretum.
You rode horses in the Arboretum.
Yeah, there was a riding academy down in Sylvan.
Yeah.
There were bridle paths because there were no houses over there, so there were bridle paths all the way up. And then we'd just go down the street, go to the Arboretum, and ride horses, which was not legal at all.
Yeah, okay.
But we did it.
Hey, now, it was fun, though,
we'll,
right?
We'll bleep this out. I don't want you to incriminate yourself at this age. I don't think that's what you need right now.
You don't want the equestrian people coming after you.
They always do, yeah. And ironically, it would be a horse cop that would come. So, you know it.
Well, a lot of people around here had horses.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
They had stables right down on the street and so forth. And right down here, yeah.
Yeah. So what was the Arboretum like back then?
Well, yeah, and it was... you know, who knew about trees? I mean, who knew that these were exotic trees?
Yeah.
There were no labels on them back then, I don't think.
Yeah.
And it was just a place to walk.
Mm-hmm.
For, I would say, 75% of the people today, it's a place to walk.
It is just a place to walk.
They don't give a hoot about trees.
Yeah, yeah.
Walk your dog.
Mm-hmm.
And... it's close, et cetera. That's okay if your dog is on a leash.
Yeah. Alex would agree with you.
Well, this is
wholeheartedly.
Portland. There are few dogs on leashes in
the city. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a nice place. And when we rode horses there, there's a flat place where the road, where Fisher Lane now goes, mm-hmm. which is kind of flat right before you get to Burnside.
Yeah.
And we used to race the horses really? On that flat spot.
Yeah, yeah. Was this before it was paved or was it paved at the time?
No, imagine. It wasn't paved.
Yeah, that would be kind of a scary thing to have horses just like sprinting down a paved road.
Fisher Lane didn't exist then.
Really? Okay, it was just that area. It was just like a path maybe.
Right. It was just flat. Mm. And I should know when Fisher Lane was put in, but I can't remember. Yeah. But it wasn't then. There were roads. And Ernie Fisher he was very good.
Is that Fisher Lane is named after Ernie?
Yeah.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah. And he did an awful lot of planting and stuff. And right, so it didn't look like it does now, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm.
And I used to get, I was taking, I went a year to Lincoln High School. Mm-hmm. And biology there, and I would go into the arboretum and collect samples of things.
Really?
That's
right down the street, your backyard.
Yeah, right. Right.
Now, again, we're not going to tell the arboretum that you were taking things, clippings from. Just to be clear, this is a safe podcast.
Alex here. Here's a little something about me. I love to be cozy. Coziness is of utmost importance to me, and I am in a constant search for coziness. And that is why we present to you Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes luxurious bedding and clothing products. And what do I mean by luxurious? Let me tell you this. I now have Cozy Earth sheets on my bed. I wear a full Cozy Earth sweatsuit to bed, and I have been getting the best sleep of my life. It is quite literally the softest material I've ever put on my body, and my skin is so happy in it. I usually have a little bit of a sensory thing. I don't like things touching my skin. Clothes are tough, but with Cozy Earth, I am treated to superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. This is a real endorsement. It's the most comfortable material to ever grace my birthday suit. And guess what? You deserve this coziness too. So treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And you know what? Completely arbitrary, listeners. A little inside detail here. You all get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. That's TREES for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now you go and get cozy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The famous other thing I've brought up a few times is your book, which is Trees of Greater Portland. So you went to each one of these trees. Do you remember how many you have in the book? Or either edition, because you have two editions now.
Now, oh goodness. It's written in the book, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know if I've read it. I just went straight to the actual trees because I'm writing my own book right now in your kind of style, I guess, about the trees of the Pacific Northwest a little broadly. But I've been going to each one of yours, and just the way you got that list from the old city forester, several of these trees have also been cut down now that I've gone to. Mm. And some of them, like there's American chestnuts, they got removed, but they had the blight, you know, it was a matter of time. But others, they've disappeared. Like I would go to it and I would use it all the time, but it's just interesting to see and to hear that it was different or the same. You've had the same experience, essentially, getting this list and finding they're gone, trying to protect them and kind of open people's eyes to these trees and things. So I'm curious what your experience was like going and finding all of these incredible trees in Portland, because even the ones that exist still today, they're stunning. Some of them, I'm like, how did you find these trees?
I know. You know? Well, one thing, I found a lot of the trees. Well, people told me about lots of the trees. Mm-hmm. I also just cruised Portland. Yeah. I would drive around and practically kill myself seeing a tree at the same time I was moving the car. You know, going to older neighborhoods would be where the bigger trees are.
It's always where the big ones are, yeah. Mm.
And when I was driving, I would go into places where I was really surprised at the size of trees. These were old neighborhoods that I had missed.
Gotcha,
There are a lot of them. Portland's a big place.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of remnant trees from where an old farm area that then got developed and they didn't cut down that, small grove of Doug firs or oaks or something.
Yeah.
Are there any trees in particular that you remember that you were, maybe you found and you didn't know, like you kind of almost discovered, I guess would be a fine term. Mm. You are specifically proud that you found or something?
I had a good friend, Stan. He was a tree ID nut. He could do it. He didn't know much about most things in the world, but he knew a lot about trees. And he was the one who helped on the original book. Mm-hmm. He would say, well, go over there and look at that tree. He would cruise Portland a lot to find trees. Okay. But he was kind of an idiot savant. I mean, he knew so much about trees and so little about anything else.
Right.
That's how I feel about Casey, except for the second part.
I feel that way about myself, though, all the time.
He's a very well-rounded person, but he's also a savant.
Just talk to me about trees, and then as soon as you get to something else, I slowly bring it back to trees, because it's the only thing I can possibly know about.
We made a whole podcast about it, Casey.
So far, it's worked. Thanks. Thank you, Alex. I appreciate that. That is we'll make sure to show everyone this book and have them search it out. Because I know you can buy them at the Arboretum. That's where I got your most recent edition.
Yeah.
The book idea, I was inspired by your book to write mine and a couple others from other kind of, mostly I saw gaps and I was like, okay, I want to do a book like this. But for all the not as interesting and cool trees, because you show the most amazing specimens of all the coolest trees.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be like, what about that dumb birch right there? We gotta include that dumb birch too.
And that's great.
Yeah.
Because people will want to know, what is this tree I've got in my front yard?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm hoping.
And they don't know. So a book like yours will be a real help.
Oh, thank you. I'm hoping that it will be.
Yeah.
He's going to put that on the cover, that poll quote.
This will be a good help. I think that'll be good. If I can quote you on the back, maybe I'll do that.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Phyllis, is there a book that you never got to write that you think, man, I wish I had written a book on that?
Hmm. Oh, good question. No, I still would like to write a book about certain aspects of trees, but... You know, most people could care less about a tree, let alone the certain aspects of it.
Sure.
I still would like to investigate certain things about trees or plants or something or other that people haven't. Yeah. And I can't be more specific than that because I don't know.
Just a little inkling of an idea.
Yeah, read into it. Yeah, yeah. Well, if you come up with anything and you want some help, let me know. Because that's my current job is literally just doing research on things that I don't know about.
Yeah.
To try to tell people about it. Because I think one thing that I have found, and I think Alex, you too, with doing the podcast, is that people apparently very much do care about these interesting things about trees. I thought that we were starting some, esoteric podcast that maybe a few people would be interested in. Alex famously thought we were going to make 6 episodes and then be done. And now we're on 140 some.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah. 140.
3 years
worth. It's our third year now. Our anniversary actually, I think, will be the 6th or the 7th. So mm-hmm. the famous January 6th of 2021. That is our anniversary date. So we remember it every time. So that is, so I think that if you ever, if you do sit down and decide that, I'm gonna type some things up or do some research, there are people out there who are really interested in it. It's just that with the age of the internet, everyone appears as an expert. So anyone can make a video, can put out something and say, I'm an expert, and then give you some information. And if you are not either skilled enough to actually kind of dissect what they're saying or have the background where you say, yeah, that person does have the reputation to know, they really do know their stuff, then you can find that they the expert level, the expertness level has gone down, but the amount of information has gone up significantly. Well,
right. But then I have read that 30% of what you get from, like, if you Google something is wrong.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that at all.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
So people are quoting 30% of the time, whatever they're quoting is not right.
You know, that's actually funny that you say that, because our podcast is famously, like, it's from my experience mostly, and then I do my research to make sure I'm getting facts mostly right. But historically, we have ironically, I think coincidentally, not ironic, have always said, yeah, our podcast is about 70% accurate. And then every now and then we might say something that just isn't quite 100%. And so I love that you called out 30%, because that lines up with what we've always said. But we're a casual show. We don't we never have meant to be a hard science, you know, get your PhD based on what I say in this episode. Yeah. You know, it's more like, yeah, we've done our research and this is it. If you need more information, here's the extra stuff.
I corrected you once.
You did?
Did you really?
When we were talking?
On Don Redwood's, yeah.
You did. You sent an email to me.
Tell us about this, Phyllis.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yes, I remember this email, actually.
Well, it was that you said there wasn't a 1948 seed in the Arboretum.
Mm-hmm.
That was collected in China, and there is.
Yeah. I didn't know that it had been sent here. We talked about this in our extra episode. Yeah, I think Becky with the Arboretum sent that.
Yeah,
over.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Alex. I withheld that from you because I was ashamed.
You knew that I would look at you differently.
I knew you would. Yeah.
Let's hear the podcast regrets the error.
The podcast regrets the error. I'm sorry, Phyllis.
Thank you for fact-checking us, Phyllis.
Well, thanks very much for sitting down with us and talking for an hour or so. Yeah, really appreciate it.
It was fun.
All right.
Any parting words for anyone?
Keep the trees.
There you have it.
Easy as that.